Welcome to Common Sense Care, Parenting Gender-Confused Kids with Truth and Love. The gender industry's so-called affirmative care model is their one-size-fits-all answer for everyone who struggles with their sense of identity. But in no other area of medicine, psychology, or education is a one-size-fits-all treatment plan the best thing for everyone. We believe that each child is an individual and should be given the care and treatment that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome back. I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer. And what are we talking about today, Maria?
We're going to talk about social media and how social media and gender dysphoria kind of interact with each other. And there's a lot to say.
This is huge. I can't tell you how many parents have told me that their child got on DeviantArt or Instagram or TikTok, saw something, was drawn into this cult, and it happened so quickly. And so I think this is something that parents are really unaware of, how insidious social media can be.
It's completely unregulated. This is one of the big problems that we're discovering. On television or in movies, there's laws about what advertisers can market to kids. There's laws about what can be said, but there's no regulation in social media. And we've seen social media just take over and transform our society. And we won't even get into any political stuff today, but we're all aware of how we're being siloed into two different political camps. And social media is really driving that. And the same thing is happening to kids. They're getting smartphones, which just opens up everything and everyone in the world to them. If your child has a smartphone and no like parental controls on it, you have just thrown that child into the world and given anybody in the world access to that child. And I'm saying this to myself as much as to anyone else, because we gave my oldest a smartphone when he got to high school. We made him wait till high school, and he's done pretty well with it, but he's even had some experiences on social media that have made him step back and say, I don't want to do social media. And he really doesn't. And my other two kids, we've just said, we're not going smartphone route because it's too dangerous.
Well, and as if the actual social media, you know, milieu wasn't difficult enough, we also have social media companies that are coming out with very difficult policies for kids. So they're really promoting the trans agenda by blocking anybody who makes a crazy statement like a woman can't have a penis. Those people get banned. And yet people who push really dangerous medical interventions to children are not banned. And one of the reasons this is incredibly confusing to me is a couple of years ago, a number of social media companies came out with a new policy about pro-anorexia groups. They actually banned pro-anorexia groups. These were groups that were encouraging girls to engage in anorexic behaviors and giving them tips on how to starve themselves to death. And, you know, there was almost this competition to see who could be the thinnest, who could be the least healthy. And so the social media companies acknowledged that this was very dangerous for children and adults, really, very dangerous for anybody. And they banned these groups. And yet they're embracing this whole trans narrative with their policies. They actually, many of them suggest that anybody who criticizes the transgender agenda is engaging in hate speech or bullying. And so they're really enabling this agenda to take hold of our children.
Well, not even criticize, but just question, just ask questions. Wait a minute, I don't understand this. What's supporting this? And you get shut down. And that's really hypocritical. And going back to what you said about the pro-ana groups, the pro-anorexia groups, what's happening to kids and what's happening all over social media is we get into these filter bubbles. You may have heard that term before, a filter bubble. The way social media works is they market you. They market your attention. The longer that you're scrolling Facebook, scrolling Instagram, scrolling TikTok, the more opportunities the platform has to sell ads to you. And so the ad companies are buying time to put ads in front of your eyes. Well, the social media companies increase your time in front of the screen by giving you things you like. Mm-hmm. So if you like something about diet and weight loss, the social media company is going to put more and more and more diet and weight loss stuff in front of you so that your time is extended on Facebook and they can market more and make more money off of you. So we get siloed into these groups, and these kids who were getting into these pro-anorexia groups, and it's the same thing with the transgender narrative groups. They post something about it, they get lots of likes, lots of hits. So then the social media sends more and more and more to them. Well, the people who are questioning whether trans narrative is correct or whether anorexia is a safe thing to do, they're not getting drawn into those communities. I'm someone who, if I saw somebody saying, I haven't eaten in 2 days, I would be concerned about that. So I'm not going to be invited into those pro-anorexia groups. So they get into these echo chambers, and it's all people who think the same thing, and they're all encouraging each other in the same gyre, spiraling gyre, going downward into these destructive behaviors. And it's really a problem. And I don't know the answer except getting kids off and getting myself off social media.
And the other concern that I have, in addition to, you know, these kids being given marketing that is, you know, directly encouraging them to believe that they're born in the wrong body and there's something wrong with them, and the only way to solve it is to damage their healthy bodies. There are predators out there who are actively going in and fishing for these kids and drawing them into this cult. I've heard stories of parents whose children have run away as a result of predators saying, if your parents don't affirm you, come to my house and I'll affirm you. Or come to my state where you can come and get this surgery that you want. Or, you know, come over to where I am and I'll help you get the hormones that you want. So these are predators who are actively preying on our children, and they've figured out algorithms, you know, to really, you know, target these kids. The other thing is that these kids are telling each other really dangerous stuff. So one of the things that I really think a lot of parents don't understand is how good girls feel when they first start taking testosterone. And I've mentioned it before, if you or I start taking it, Maria, initially we'd feel really good. It's a controlled substance, it's a steroid. And so girls who start taking it are like, I feel awesome. This is amazing. They start having this gender euphoria, they call it. And all their friends are looking at them on social media and they're like, oh my gosh, you know, Jane, who decided to be John, is suddenly high on the world. I want that too. And so, and then the child who's gotten it will counsel them how to get it, you know. And I've heard story after story after story from detransitioner of how they were coached to get this, because we know if the kid goes in and says, I just saw my friend Jane and she got some testosterone, she's feeling high, I want some too, the doctor's gonna be like, nah, maybe, hopefully. But if she goes in and she has the right script, which is, I've always felt this way, I hid it from my parents, I'm afraid people won't like me, but I've come to the truth that I need to accept the authentic self, they are very likely to get testosterone very quickly. And so these girls are, not just girls, this community is sharing scripts so that these kids know what to do and what to say to get the drugs that they want, what to do and what to say to get the teachers to accept their new identity. So it's very dangerous. It's just sort of this perfect climate for grooming kids.
When I talk to parents whose kids have done this, their stories are identical. I really struggle when I'm listening to a new parent who's sort of unloading, because I just want to say, I know what you're going to say. Yep, your child said felt this way all her life. Yep, he said he's never liked his body. It's a trope. And you wonder, where is the script coming from? Well, it's coming from social media. And Partners for Ethical Care did a very small informal survey, about 60 adequate real responses of detransitioners and their parents. We did that in February of 2021. And social media came out as one of the biggest places that was the first introduction for kids to this gender stuff. And I know of one child who was on a social media platform, was befriended by supposedly another 13-year-old, you never know, Anybody who's ever gotten the, I'm a Nigerian prince and I just need you to, you know, I've got all this money I'm going to give you, you know, you can't trust that who somebody is who they, you know, is who they're saying they are. But this young person was on social media, met this supposed 13-year-old, and the mom went back and retraced the, they were sharing a Google Doc. After they got off social media, they were doing it by a Google Doc, and the mom went back and restored the whole Google Doc. And the her daughter asked the supposed 13-year-old, so what's being transgender about? Tell me about that. And 6 weeks later, this girl announced that she was transgender, that she felt that way all her life, the whole script. So kids are being conditioned, they're being preyed upon. And we also know that these gender clinics, these gender doctors, they're advertising on social media directly to children, which is illegal, a la the Federal Communications Commission, on television and on movies and on radio, but it's not illegal on social media.
And we know that this is an issue because Lisa Lippman did a study about rapid onset gender dysphoria and really pinpoints social media as being one of the big factors. And like you said, these, you know, I've seen videos where doctors are targeting children. They'll actually, you know, put something up on TikTok about how great it is to have your breasts cut off, and then they'll engage with children. Either they or someone from their office will message back and forth with children saying, yeah, come to our clinic. It doesn't matter how old you are. We can take care of you. They are, you know, they're preying upon children. The other thing that I'm hearing increasingly from parents is that their children, somebody in the child's school or peer group or Facebook friend group or TikTok, you know, somehow will announce that they're transgender and then say, do you support trans rights? Really pressure these kids to come out and say, oh, of course I do. And a lot of times when that happens, other kids will be saying, well, actually I'm trans too, because they want that acceptance and affirmation. And so these parents are seeing these threads in social media and are very concerned and not sure how to deal with it. And again, Maria, I think, you know, as hard as it is, these kids need to be pulled away from this influence. We need to get them off the computers, off their phones, get them outside, interacting with real people, interacting with, you know, with life. Have them volunteer at a food pantry or at a homeless shelter or maybe at a, you know, a humane society. Get them out there in the world, interacting with life rather than focused on social media, because these kids are just being drawn into this. And we know the long-term consequences of being pulled into this cult are devastating to these children.
And it's not just the trans agenda that's an issue on social media. We have seen childhood and teen depression increasing. I want to cite the statistic, I just read it. I think it has, depression among kids has increased 57% in the last 10 years. I'm thinking that's the statistic. But if you look at the chart of when social media was introduced and started to become widely used, the depression line follows it exactly. That's a really suspicious correlation that this is what's driving this raised increase in depression. And social media is so 24/7. I was just talking with a friend of mine who's a psychologist, and she explained it in a way I hadn't thought about it before, but I think she's right on. She said, you know, when we were in school and you had that one kid, you know, we'll call her Jody, who was a jerk. And Jody was in your fourth hour class, and she had three of her buddies in there, and they just made your life miserable through fourth hour. And then maybe she was in lunch with you, but at lunch, you kind of had your own buddies. So you sat on opposite sides of the cafeteria, but that was the only time you saw Jody. You could, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh hour were fine. You'd go home. You didn't have to deal with Jody. With social media and smartphones and connected devices, Jody has access to you 24/7. Jody can spread rumors about you 24/7. And it's relentless, and there's no break, and there's no chance for kids to recover. And when my friend explained that to me, I just thought that's it. That's what's going on.
Yeah, that's a really good point. These kids are just sucked in. And Jonathan Haidt also has some data that shows that teen suicide, completed suicides, has gone up directly with the use of social media. And so, again, we can't say social media causes, you know, depression, anxiety, suicide, but we can sure say that something's going on. And the fact that children are actually completing suicides at such a high rate now is really concerning. And trans activists will always say it's because of transphobia, but we've seen as people have become more accepting, the rates are actually going up. As more kids are transitioning, the rates are going up. So it really is disingenuous to suggest that the cause of these suicides is social, or is not being affirmed, and the connection between social media looks to be pretty strong. So I was wondering if you'd mind if we watch a trailer to this show that's really about how social media manipulates us, and how, you know, as adults we have you know, we have the decision, we have kind of the cognitive ability to make choices about how much we want to expose ourselves. But children really don't understand the consequences of this. Mm-hmm. I remember my daughter, who is now an adult, but when, you know, she started on Facebook when she was, you know, an older teen, and some of the stuff she posted on there comes back to haunt her. It doesn't go away. And so, you know, periodically she'll be reminded of, you know, that horrible boyfriend that she had when she was a teenager. And it just, it, you know, it's sort of like out there in the world now. And I think that, you know, parents need to really understand that children don't have the cognitive ability to really assess how social media is affecting them or how their use is going to affect them in the long term.
Yeah.
When you go to Google and type in climate change is, you're going to see different results depending on where you live and the particular things that Google knows about your interests.
That's not by accident. That's a design technique.
What I want people to know is that everything they're doing online is being watched, is being tracked. Every single action you take is carefully monitored and recorded.
A lot of people think Google's just a search box and Facebook's just a place to see what my friends are doing. What they don't realize is there's entire teams of engineers whose job is to use your psychology against you.
I was the co-inventor of the Facebook like button.
I was the president of Pinterest.
Google. Twitter. Instagram.
There were meaningful changes happening around the world because of these platforms.
I think we were naive about the flip side of that coin.
We get rewarded by hearts, likes, thumbs up, and we conflate that with value and we conflate it with truth.
A whole generation is more anxious, more depressed.
I always felt like fundamentally it was a force for good. I don't know if I feel that way anymore.
Facebook discovered that they were able to affect real-world behavior and emotions without ever triggering the user's awareness. They are completely clueless.
Fake news spreads 6 times faster than true news. We're being bombarded with rumors.
Everyone's entitled to their own facts. There's really no need for people to come together. In fact, there's really no need for people to interact.
We have less control over who we are and what we really believe.
If you want to control the population of your country, there has never been a tool as effective as Facebook.
We built these things and we have a responsibility to change it.
The intention could be, how do we make the world better?
If technology creates mass chaos, loneliness, more polarization, more election hacking, more inability to focus on the real issues, we're toast.
Wow. I've seen this documentary, The Social Dilemma. It is powerful, and I really strongly recommend that everybody watch it. If you don't have Netflix, I think that's the only place it's available right now. Go to a friend's house who has Netflix and watch it, because it really explains how we've gotten to where we are. And they also suggest some ways to fix the problem, if not globally, at least for yourself, how to kind of manage it and fix it for your own family.
And I just encourage parents to, you know, I know that it's hard when you take something like this away from the kids. They can get really angry. But I think that there are ways to mitigate that. know, you can either say you can do social media, but I want to have access to your account so I can see what's going on. One of the things that we've done with my youngest son is we've given him an hour a day to do, you know, computer stuff. And he's always chosen to play a video game that we're okay with. And that's worked very well. He hasn't been interested in using social media. Again, I feel very blessed by that because I haven't had to navigate that with him. But, you know, the other thing that I want to mention to parents is that when you share information about your child on social media, that's out there in the world too. And that potentially could get in the hands of predators. And so I always caution parents to be careful about what you share about your child on social media. Even if you're in a private group, chances are there's somebody in that group that has nefarious intentions. And so again, a lot, you know, I sort of have heard this, the phrase that, you know, that we're not able to keep up with the tech, we're able to create technology faster than we're able to sort of keep up with it cognitively, emotionally, to understand the impacts of it. And we've historically seen that with other technologies. And I think we're seeing that now with social media. We really, it hasn't been around long enough for us to really understand how to use it in a positive way. And I don't want to suggest that social media is all bad. I think that it's, you know, we've used it as Partners for Ethical Care to reach people and to help parents and to spread messages. So I think it can be a very positive means of reaching people and something, you know, I don't want to paint it as all bad, but it is so important for parents to understand that these children are vulnerable and that there are predatory businesses that are marketing to them. There are predatory people who are trying to gain access to them. There's a society that seems hell-bent on grooming kids. And so this is something that parents need to really be aware of.
Yeah, and I want to echo what you said. There's a lot of really positive applications of social media and a lot of really great things we can do with it. But parents really need to understand how powerful it is and how much like a drug it is. Yeah. When your child is scrolling through their feed and getting likes, they post a picture and they get a bunch of likes, they actually get a dopamine hit. That's a positive feedback. And these social media platforms are designed around psychological principles of giving people positive feedback. And it really becomes like a drug. And you kind of think of it like sugar, like a little bit of sugar is nice. You know, you can put a little bit in your lemonade, you can have a piece of cake, but if your whole diet is sugar and you're eating sugar all day long, it's unhealthy. And there's a lot of things that are unhealthy about the way kids are using social media today. Another thing I want to mention is I'm seeing more and more parents in some of our parenting groups cutting off social media or doing what you did and saying you can have it for 1 hour a day under supervision. And they're saying, wow, my child is coming back. Like they're dropping the trans narrative. Like I'm seeing this more and more that cutting out social media almost leads to a nearly immediate improvement in the child's self-esteem, their outlook. One mom, trying to think how she said it, but just like, my child acts like my child again. Like she smiled, she's smiling and laughing. And I haven't seen that in months. So I think there's a lot of strong anecdotal evidence to suggest that social media is not a healthy thing for kids right now.
Yeah, especially for teenage girls and boys. I just think of, you know, it's hard enough going through those changes under, you know, the best of circumstances. And if you're constantly worried about being bullied or whether you're going to post something that's going to, you know, make people think you're bad, or if you're going to, you know, do something that's going to get you bullied, or you never know when you might open that social media and have a pile on for something you've done. Mm-hmm. And that striving to always get those likes, as you said, studies have been shown that that is the most, you know, the way social media works with those little hits of dopamine is one of the most motivating factors for people. We really are responsive to that, which is why it's so addictive and compelling. And so kids don't have the, oftentimes, you know, those the maturation to really be able to walk away from it when they need to. And even adults sometimes, I mean, I know adults who spend, you know, 4 or 5 hours strolling through social media. And, you know, I do think if you can, you know, just turn it off, go for a walk, get outside, go swimming, do something physical, that's going to help these kids' mental outlook so much just by, you know, engaging with the world instead of with the screen. So do we have any questions?
We do. Yeah. We have one question from a parent. How do I take social media away from my child? He needs his phone and he uses devices at school. Is it really realistic to think we can cut off social media influences?
And that's a hard one, because one of the things that I know kids will try to do is, you know, go behind their parents' back. And so, you know, in some ways it's, you know, if you say no social media, your kid might say, okay, and then figure out a way around it. I actually saw an interview with a young man who had perpetrated a sexual crime against his sister. And it was as a result of watching pornography. And even though his parents put some, you know, put some tools on the computer to prevent him from doing that, he figured out how to get around it. And kids are really smart in that way. And so one of the things that I suggest to parents is, rather than just saying you can't have that, you know, you're grounded from social media, to really have honest discussions with kids about the impact, you know, let them watch that movie, talk to them about how they've seemed less happy, find out other activities that you can do with them that will be engaging, so that you don't have to just say, okay, that's it, I'm cutting you off. If you do, you might have to just cut the internet off at your home. I mean, that might be something that you have to do if your child is really in deep, you know, just really addicted. You might just have to, and that's going to be hard for parents, but it might be something you can do temporarily to wean your child off social media if they're really addicted and if they're spiraling down.
One of the things that we've done in our house is let our child have one social media platform. So one of my kids is really into art and wanted to be able to share art things. And she said, I kind of want to either have a DeviantArt or an Instagram or something. So we talked about it and we said, pick one. And I'm going to follow you and you're going to follow me. And I'm going to approve everybody who follows you. And we talked that through and she was fine with it. And it has worked well because she still has access to her friends, but it's not just this throw her into the deep end of the swimming pool. You know, it's one app. And again, just, I want to see what you're doing. I want to see who you're interacting with. And as my kids get older and prove that they're able to handle it, we'll back off on those controls a bit more. But something I was thinking about a little earlier, you were talking about the addictive nature of it. I struggle with this myself. And my husband and I often will watch some TV or a movie in the evening, and I'll find myself grabbing my phone and scrolling through Facebook. And by the way, one of the things the Social Dilemma movie tells you is that pull down to refresh, that comes from slot machines. Mm-hmm. That's the same movement of slot machines. And that's why they adopted that, because it gives you a feeling of what's going to come up. And my husband will nudge me and look at me and give me that.
Right.
What are you doing? Look, I'm like, you're right. Why do I want to look at this while we're watching a movie? It's because it has grabbed me. It has addicted me. And I need to take control of that.
Another suggestion would be to have a, you know, technology-free day. And this is something that schools used to encourage when my kids were little. You know, every Friday, turn off the TV and keep it off for 24 hours. And back then it was, you know, just the TV that was mainly what kids were using. You know, don't get on the computer. I guess we did have, you know, most adults had computers, but the kids didn't really. And so that was something that we regularly did with my older kids is You know, we'd have every week a TV-free day so that they learned that they could survive without watching TV. And we didn't watch much TV. By the time they were teenagers, we actually didn't even have a TV because we just weren't that interested in it. And so that's a way that you can kind of wean kids off and make those days that are technology-free days fun. You know, figure out what activities your kids like. And that time you spend with your kids is going to be really valuable too, because it's going to be building those relationships with each other, which are super important. A lot of parents sort of think that teenagers will parent themselves, but I almost think in some ways that's the most important time for parenting.
Yeah, I think so too. It's so easy. And I fall into this too, because my kids can make their own meals and, you know, they can wash their own clothes. And I start feeling like, yeah, my parenting job's kind of done. But no, they have real issues, real needs, things that they want to talk over. And if we make ourselves available, we can't make those conversations happen, but if we make ourselves available, those conversations very frequently will happen, and they can be very rewarding for both you and your child. So I think those are some great ideas. Yeah. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
No, I just want to really encourage parents to kind of feel empowered with this. I think a lot of parents are intimidated by, you know, the concept of taking something away from their kids. We've really gotten, you know, as a society, sort of this idea that, you know, kids get to dictate what they get to do, you know, how they get to interact with the world. And it's okay for parents to assert parental, you know, parenting, really, to say, you know, I've noticed this, that you've been really unhappy since you started watching TikTok. And mm-hmm. I think we need to take that away. And mm-hmm. that's okay to do. I want parents to feel okay with it. I also want parents to understand this isn't their fault. Again, this is, you know, parenting is so much harder now. There are just so much more influences that are trying to subvert your efforts to raise a healthy child. And so if your child is really, you know, being persuaded by social media, if your child has gotten pulled into the cult, it's not your fault. You know, none of us could have predicted how powerful social media would be.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm glad that you said that, because that's something else I hear from parents so often is, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? And I mean, none of us are perfect parents. We've all done things wrong. But yeah, this is something that really came out of left field. And I don't think any of us could have foreseen this or could have known how to prevent it, because it's really taken a few years of observing this to even recognize, oh, this is a cult. Oh, that's what this is. And cults are notoriously sneaky. They're surreptitious. They go for vulnerable people behind the backs of those who would protect them. So do cut yourself some slack and don't beat yourself up over this. We're all struggling to raise our kids in this environment and in the culture that we're in now. And we need to have some grace for ourselves.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Maria.
Thank you too. And if anyone has anything that Partners for Ethical Care could help you with, please come to our website, partnersforethicalcare.com, or send us an email at support@partnersforethicalcare.com. See you next time.
Take care, Maria.
You too. Bye-bye.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused kids with truth and love.